It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters. Last year, the Iowa legislature made available $22 million over 5 years available to support water quality practices outlined in the so-called Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. It's a joint effort of the Department of Natural Resources, the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, and Iowa State University. It's to reduce the amount of nutrients Iowa farmers send downstream, primarily the Mississippi River, which is a large contributor to the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, this includes certain farming practices like no-till, strip-till, planting so-called cover crops, buffer strips. Some have problems with the fact that it's asking farmers to do this voluntarily. I spent some time with farmers up and down the Des Moines River last summer and got the perspectives of many farmers, and for many, they just didn't know they were causing a problem in sending fertilizer downstream until they got their water checked. At the outset of the session, Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall, a Democrat from Council Bluffs, said on our show he'd like to see significant commitment to water quality this session. We reached out to Senate Democrats to be on the show today, and unfortunately they could not make it today. I am, however, joined by Jared Klein, a member of the House Environmental Protection Committee. He's a Republican from Kyoto. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Jennifer Terry with the Iowa Environmental Council, she joined 3 months ago. Her work as an ag policy specialist has been focused on the nutrient reduction strategy as it affects nonprofits. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Clay.
And joining us on the phone, Iowa DNR Director Chuck Gipp. Good afternoon, Chuck.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well. Are you a farmer, someone who is concerned about the quality of water in your community? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Reach out to us on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us an email at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Chuck Gipp, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy that was unveiled more than a year ago. We're coming up on year one of when it was signed. Give us a progress report.
Well, let's give a progress report by making sure that we know that it's a joint effort between what they call agriculture producers or non-point source generators as well as point source generators of nitrogen phosphorus, point source generators being some of the largest businesses as well as the city waste treatment plants that come out of that. So I think we have to make sure that we include both point and non-point source when we talk about water quality improvement. And in that regard, the Department of Agriculture, through their funding partners and partners, have focused on seeking improvements in the number of on the amount of nitrogen phosphorus coming off the non-point source or agricultural landscapes, while the Department of Natural Resources, through its permitting authority of wastewater treatment plants and industrial users, are focusing on reducing the amount of nitrogen phosphorus coming out of those facilities. In that regard, and as far as the Department of Natural Resources, we are on track to authorize permits with the condition that they do a feasibility study on some of those largest industrial and city and municipal facilities to incorporate that study before we issue that permit or renew their permit for discharge into Iowa's water bodies. And we'll have over 20 of those out of about 130 of facilities that generate over a million gallons of wastewater on an annual basis on board as to doing that feasibility study to determine how they can do it. As far as the non-point source side and agriculture community, working with Secretary Northey and Iowa State University and various commodity groups, I think they've shown significant interest in progress and putting best management practices, or BPMs, BMPs as we call them, installing buffers, wetland construction, cover crops, and those types of BMPs on their landscape. And I think we're seeing an interest like we haven't before. Obviously, on the non-point source side, it's way too early to have a measurable amount, but we see considerable interest from non-point source and agricultural producers in achieving nutrient reduction.
And the biggest contributor to the nutrients that are being washed in the waterways, they would be from the, as you refer to them, the non-point polluters, correct?
That's correct. The goal of the hypoxia task force, which is charged with reducing the amount of nitrogen phosphorus that contributes to the dead zone down in the Gulf, which are come down through the tributaries out of Iowa as well as other Midwestern and Mississippi River Basin states, is to reduce non-point source pollution by 41%. When it comes to nitrogen, is by 45%, and then of that, 41% is deemed to be coming from the non-point source generators, 4% of the nitrogen from the point source generators, 29% of the phosphorus coming from non-point and agricultural landscapes, and 16% from the point source contributors. So that's what we're trying to achieve, reduce that impact of nitrogen phosphorus transport to our waterways, and therefore providing for a better environmental outcome at the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay, let's bring Jennifer Terry into the conversation with the Iowa Environmental Council. What's your take on this issue? Is the legislature being proactive enough with the money allocated, making this a voluntary point?
Thanks, Clay. I think that the nutrient reduction strategy is definitely a step in the right direction. We have a strategy now, and it's a living document. And so I think we're tasked with making that a living document, which means, the strategy has brought focus and awareness to the problem with nitrogen and phosphorus. But now we need to take another step, which means we need to assure Iowans that we're headed in the right direction. And the way to do that is to strengthen the strategy. We want the strategy to succeed, but we need to strengthen it by adding public timelines and benchmarks. We need to be able to tell producers, hey, the things that you're doing are working. We want to demonstrate that to Iowans. So we also want to see some local watershed goals. We're, of course, concerned about the Gulf, but we're also concerned with what's going on our local watersheds and the nitrogen and phosphorus that are coming off the local watersheds across the state.
And what kind of impact on those watersheds are we seeing in the state of Iowa?
Well, I think, it depends on where you're at. It depends on where you're at on the state. I'll tell you that I've met with, since I started with the council about 3 months ago, I've met with about 50 stakeholders, and there's just a lot of concern. You know, you ask, is water quality improving? People do, and I think that people drive along Interstate 80 and they see that some producers are making really good conservation decisions and some producers maybe could be making better decisions. So I think that, it remains to be seen how this voluntary framework is going to be encouraged and how farmers are going to be, brought more into the picture. And I know that farmers have been doing conservation practices for years and years, and I certainly don't mean to downplay that. But we are going to have to work together, as Director Gipps said, the producers out on the farms as well as the urban dwellers, to solve the problems.
Representative Klein, what kind of work is going on in your committee to address water quality concerns this session?
Well, not necessarily in the Environmental Protection Committee, but it's really happening within our budget subcommittee for the Agriculture and Natural Resources. A lot of that goes back to last year, setting up the voluntary framework, but following it up with the dollars is a big part of what we're talking about nowadays. And I'm glad you highlighted the $22 million additional we got in, because that was one-time money. That's going to cost share. Cost share is a great program because that leverages an additional dollar for every dollar out of the state, if not more than that. These are programs that are helping put in very expensive systems that do improve water quality. So getting that into there, I'm glad you mentioned the watersheds. That's a great thing. We put an additional $2 million in last year, or we're looking at $2 million again for this year that passed out of our budget, and we also increased them about $1.6 million last year. So we're definitely kicking money into those watersheds, working with Watershed Improvement Review Board, who's out there trying to target some goals and to see some real impact on the ground. So those are the different things we're working on inside the budget subcommittee. And I would say, looking back on that from last year, when the grant programs became available for farmers to utilize the money for cover crops and things like that, I think we saw how successful voluntary works in Iowa. That money was gone within 2 weeks, and it already had a very limited number that were able to apply it. The only people that could apply at the time were those that had never done anything before, to encourage those new people that are maybe not doing things today to try something different. We also limited the acreage to 160 acres per applicant. So we put some pretty tough restrictions on, but we still had the interest to the level of it used the entire allocation up within 2 weeks. Shows that farmers are hungry out there to improve their conservation practices.
Now, everybody seems to be in agreement that we need to get water quality better. It seems the one sticking point always tends to go back to this aspect of voluntary compliance. And certainly, every time I turn on my shower here in Des Moines, my bathroom kind of starts to smell like a swimming pool. I mean, they're having to treat more and more chlorine to make the water safe and meet the Clean Water Act. Is there a tipping point somewhere in this? Representative Klein, we'll start with you.
I think part of it is you got to look at trying to have some good studies done out there to have a good baseline to work with, because we get multiple different different people tell us different things with their numbers they pull out. I've got a study from mid-February that shows nitrate levels in the Raccoon River, which is exactly what you're talking about, have dropped since 1999 every year by 0.28 milligrams per liter per year since 1999. So I'm getting a study here that shows me how the nitrates are dropping over all those years, in addition to we need to have that, but we need to also take into account weather and the great variances we've had in the last several years. As a farmer myself, it can be quite frustrating these last couple of years. We seem to get a large amount of rain in the spring, and then we'll get a dry spell, and then we'll get a couple big rain instances again, make it difficult for us not only to manage our fields, but manage the nutrients in those fields. So the weather aspects, I think, is something to take into account, because that can tend to give you a spike in your numbers one way or another, depending on which year you're looking at. So those, I think, are some important things going forward.
Jennifer?
I would say that if you read the nutrient reduction strategy, the science assessment makes it very clear that there's a lot to be done. And those have to be transformative landscape changes. So, you know, we've been given this voluntary framework, and I ask people, I encourage them to tell me, how do we know this is going to work? You know, I meet with Iowans and they say, how do we know voluntary is working? That's why we need the timelines and the benchmarks and the measurement, as Representative Klein says. And, you know, as in terms of the studies, there's a lot of studies. I would say that it's a mistake to take part of a study and try and apply that to the whole state. Iowa is still one of the biggest exporters of nitrogen and phosphorus into the Mississippi. When you go to the lakes this summer, I fear that you're going to try and take your little ones into the water and there's going to be algae blooms. So I think to take one part of a study and then extrapolate it across the state is a mistake. And I don't want people to think that they can just check water quality off their list and everything's okay.
We're going to go to the line right now. Mark joins us from Des Moines. I understand, Mark, you live on the farm you grew up on. Welcome to River to River. Mark, are you there? Well, the gist of there you are, Mark.
Yep. My question is, are we being a little bit sanguine about the whole thing? Because our world population is growing very quickly. And I grew up on a farm, still live on the same land I always lived on. I'm 74. We are having more food on the same amount of land. When I was a kid, if you got 100 bushels to an acre, you made the headlines. We didn't have to farm intensely. We didn't have hog confinements, cattle confinements, chicken confinements, etc. And in order to feed the world, we have to do those things. Now, how is this going to work out?
Okay, Chuck Gipp, maybe we'll field that to you. Can we keep up with demand when we've got more food to produce on the same land that we've been producing on?
Well, absolutely. The answer to that is clearly yes, because we have different technology today. Part of the strategy is timeliness of application, and the studies show from Iowa State University when that crop that we wish to produce, whether it's corn or beans or other commodity crops, when that needs that nitrogen and phosphorus. And so we're actually applying the proper amount at the proper time to get maximum yields. Rather than the way it used to be done years ago, is you simply broadcast it out there, and therefore, if it wasn't taken up by the crop, then it was susceptible to leaching when you had the rain events take place. So the science is one of the other components. It's just not the non-point or the point source generators of nitrogen phosphorus that outflow, but it's a science that shows how we can use those nutrients, critical to crop production, critical to providing the food stuff that we need to feed the burgeoning population, at the same time, not making available for leaching out of the soil. So the answer clearly is yes.
Jennifer, do you see it differently?
I am also a native Iowan. I was raised on a dairy farm in Hardin County, Iowa, so I clearly understand the need to feed the world. But I also understand that all the water that's flowing across the land in Iowa belongs to all Iowans. And so I think we all need to work together to make better decisions about how we use nitrogen, and I know that farmers are working on that. So I understand the need to feed the world, as we like to say, but I also understand that Iowans that I talk to want reassurance that this strategy is working, that the government is working to make these things happen.
We want to go now to the phones again. We have Mary from Keokuk County. Mary, you're on River to River.
Great. Hi, Representative Klein. We know each other well.
Yes, Mary. How are you today?
I live between the forks. How are you, by the way?
Good.
Good. I am calling because I'd like to ask about filter strips that were, I thought, an effective program. And it seems like it's going. The filter strip program is going by the wayside. We farm between the forks of the North and South Skunk Rivers. And they fork on my father-in-law's ground down the road here.
Mary, quick, tell us what you mean by a filter strip here. What are we talking about?
Well, filter strips were a government program that offered a natural, and I think one of your guests can explain filter strips further, but filter strips were a government program that whereby farmers were paid to leave a grassy strip between their fields and rivers and creeks,
okay,
water bodies.
So your question for Representative Klein? What's your question for Representative Klein?
It's where is the filter strip program now?
Okay.
The filter strip program, I'm not sure going back in history if that was a federal or a state program, but what we're looking at is you do have the applicability for some of your cost share money to be used for filter strips, and that's a unique situation for us down there where the North and South Skunk combine. We have some different challenges there in Keokuk County and then further down the stream in Washington County encouraging the filter strips. So I think what we do with some money, whether we're using it for cost share or we're talking about the cover crops, that's where we're able to fit that in. I don't think the issue has been that we're not interested in doing the filter strips. I think that the issue is more that cover crops is the more current thing people are trying to take advantage of. I think it's more of a trending issue rather than one issue being more important than another.
So, and you bring up cover crops. For a lot of people listening, they don't know what it is. Explain
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I try not to get too far out in the weeds in farmer speak, per se.
Right.
But cover crops is when we do things like plant rye and barley, different crops in the fall that help fix the nitrogen in the soil and help keep it there so that it doesn't wash down when we have major water events.
These are on a different growing season.
They're on their own growing season, and they're not used as a commodity production. They're used purely to hold that nitrogen in the ground and fix it there so it doesn't go away. So then there's unique challenges there because we have to kill that off here in the spring before we can get our next crop planted. There's issues that we run into with cover crops on holding more moisture in the soil or not having it there, and that's definitely an issue at planting time. So getting farmers to adopt these on more widespread basis, I think, is an important thing because we have a lot to learn on how do we handle it with very wet springs versus normal springs. How do we go about the best way to kill that off so we can get the next crop in there? Some different things like that.
And when you think about the farmer in Iowa, you know, there's an advertisement on TV that I've seen a couple times now that's paid for by the Farm Bureau where a bunch of farmers are sitting around a cafe table in anywhere Iowa talking about how much they've reduced nutrient runoff on their farm. But, you know, the reality is a lot of the people that I talk to, they don't even know that there is a problem. So I guess how is it being addressed in the legislature to, if it's not voluntary at this point and it looks like it might not be that way, how do you get the conversation to make voluntary be something that everyone wants to do or will do?
Well, we encourage the competition that's already naturally going on out there. You talk about sitting around at the coffee shop. There's a lot of competition in agriculture, and it's not necessarily about who makes the most money, who can do the best job, who can raise the most corn with the least nitrogen, who can do the best with what they've got. That's the competition that happens. So by putting some of the funding out there like we have, encourages them to try these new practices. So when they see their neighbor doing some cover crops that they've not done before, maybe the jealousy kicks in and they want to be the next one on the block or just taking advantage of those different things is what starts to happen. So I think we've spurred that in the coffee shops out there. As a matter of fact, I know we have because I witnessed that last spring or last fall when the letters were being sent out by Department of Agriculture. When I stopped into the convenience store, a number of people would come up and ask me about the program and got this letter and talk a little bit about it. So I know the conversation is happening out there, and I think that's why it's important for us to continue supporting what we have started like we have.
So, Jennifer, less time at the State House, more time at the coffee house then, apparently?
I think it's going to take a two-pronged, at least, effort.
Okay.
But, of course, the funding is very important, and I understand there may be some supplemental money available. If so, we'd be interested, and we're interested to see where that money's going to go. We think the money needs to be targeted to areas that need the most help, and we think that there needs to be targeted a suite of practices. We're really encouraged, like Representative Klein said, about the cover crops. Certainly, the nutrient reduction strategy points to cover crops as an important piece, but it's going to take a broad suite of practices. Everybody agrees on that to get the changes that we need. And I was talking to an ag leader a few weeks ago, and he said something that really resonated with me, and that was, should be the way we do business in Iowa. And so if everybody could get on board with that and figure out how to encourage voluntary participation, that's what we're after.
All right. Certainly a conversation that's going to continue. Thanks so much to both Chuck Gipp, director of the DNR, and to Jennifer with the Iowa Environmental Council. Thanks so much for being on River to River today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh, Rep-